We expect some animals to migrate. Birds and butterflies, sure, they're light and fast. And we've gotten used to the idea of mammals traveling long distances, both from gray whales in the ocean and from gray wolves on the land. But black bears are travelers of import at the moment. Sure, they are present in many parts of the country, but they've covered a lot of ground to reestablish themselves in parts of Nevada. Nevada's gain is California's loss up to a point, because that's the source of the bear migration, back to old stomping grounds to the east. It's exciting to wildlife biologists who wrote up a recent study documenting the bear migration. We have one of them with us now. John Beckman is a biologist and Connectivity Initiative Coordinator for Wildlife Conservation Society of North America, WCS North America. John, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So unlike, for example, grizzlies who have disappeared in large parts of the West, I think the general belief in much of the West is that black bears are plentiful. But what happened to them in Nevada?
Well, it was a combination of a couple factors that led to their loss and decline for both black bears and grizzly bears through the Great Basin. The first was habitat loss, mainly due to deforestation. And what we saw is logging occurring for two different reasons. In the Sierra and western Nevada, we saw those timber going underground to be support structures for the mines, the gold and silver mines, particularly during the Comstock lode era in the 1860s and 1870s. And in the central part of the Great Basin, what we saw is the forest being removed for fuel protection, namely to run charcoal mills. Then there was a second factor that led to the decline of both black bears and grizzly bears, and eventually their loss from the Great Basin, and that was the direct removal of bears because of conflicts with ranchers and their livestock.
Was there ever a bounty or other mechanism to encourage people to kill them?
It wasn't bounties per se. It was just the removal when settlers settled the Great Basin and removed them when they had conflicts. And, you know, because of the arid nature of the Great Basin, the densities were never really high for bears, and so they didn't have a extremely large population, most likely historically, but they were both grizzly bears and black bears found throughout the state of Nevada.
So sort of scattered in the places where they could find some habitat. I mean, how much less dense than in, for example, a forest?
Well, there's definitely forest in the central part of the Great Basin and the higher mountain ranges, and so what we saw is that the densities would be slightly lower, but just the sheer volume of habitat wasn't at the level to have them, for example, contiguous across the entire landscape, and so they existed in more or less isolated pockets of forested habitat through the Great Basin.
And so did any bears manage to hang out in those isolated pockets, or was it presumed that they were all gone?
Yeah, so one of the things that we looked at in this recent study is the genetic consequences of that, and we looked at the signatures of the genes, and those genetic signatures demonstrated that, in fact, we did not have any remnants of bears left in the Great Basin. And so that matches up well with the observations of biologists and scientists through the years, where bears were most likely completely extirpated from the Great Basin.
So when we're talking about the Comstock lode, we're talking about the latter half of the 1800s. How long since bears were extirpated in the Great Basin?
Yeah, so the decline of species like bears began in the 1860s. The last bears were actually removed out of the state of Nevada in the early 1930s. In fact, people may be surprised to know that for the grizzly bears, the last documented grizzly bear in the state of Nevada was actually 6 years after they were declared extinct in the state of California.
Oh, okay. So they lasted a little longer in Nevada.
Yeah, the lower human population density allowed them to have a few isolated pockets, but essentially they were both species were extirpated by the 1930s, and so we've gone 80-plus years without either bear species in the Great Basin landscape.
But things are changing, which is why we're talking to John Beckman today here on the Jefferson Exchange, a biologist and Connectivity Initiative Coordinator. We'll find out what that is for Wildlife Conservation Society of North America. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about bears repopulating the Great Basin, apparently without much help. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, John, what has been the trend in recent years in Nevada?
Yeah, so the bear population has begun to respond and recover over the last 20 to 25 years, and there's been a couple of factors that have been important in that natural rewilding of the Great Basin. The first is that post-World War II, we saw a decline in the dependency on wood as a fuel source as we move more to fossil fuels. And so forests and habitats were able to regenerate over the last 80 years. And so we've seen a recovery of the forested habitat that these bears need to survive. And the second factor has been conservation and management by the Nevada Department of Wildlife, working with groups like the Wildlife Conservation Society to reduce some of the conflicts and interactions to increase coexistence between bears and people, particularly as they were first beginning to recolonize in western Nevada from areas like the Lake Tahoe Basin. And so those two factors have really led to a redistribution and a recolonization of bears into the Great Basin.
Well, you mentioned the Lake Tahoe Basin, which is a high elevation and a fair amount of forest, so that seems like a natural place for them to start spreading east. But have they gone fairly far flung from there?
Yeah, we've documented bears all the way essentially across Nevada. We've particularly along the northern edge, so you go along the northern edge of Nevada, both with the southern border of Oregon and the southern border of Idaho, and we have bears all the way from northwest Nevada clear over to northeast Nevada, and we're starting to see them all the way through the central part of the state. And when we looked at the genetics, one may assume that the bears were coming from, like in the northern part of the Great Basin, from populations in Idaho or Oregon, but the genetics actually show that those bears' source areas are actually the Sierra along the Nevada-California border.
All right, so generally California bears, or bears by the state line anyway.
Yes.
So I imagine then that there's enough food and ecosystem to support them. I mean, they wouldn't go into places where they didn't think they could live, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's the one advantage that a species like black bears have, even though obviously they're technically carnivores and they will eat meat and things like ungulates, so deer, elk, those kind of things. Their diet is very diverse, and they'll eat a wide range of foods, ranging from berries to ants to grasses. And in the Great Basin, one of the main food sources are pinyon pine nuts. So they really need those pine nuts to pack on the calories in the fall.
And so are there more of those trees around to provide that sort of? I mean, it sounds like the food supply is not half bad if they're still managing to expand as far as they appear to be going.
Yeah, the food supply is in fairly good shape, particularly for those critical resources like pine nuts. And with that recovery of the forest throughout the Great Basin over the last 80 to 90 years, the food supply seems to be ample for bear expansion to continue.
So, John, do you have estimates on how big the population has gotten in Nevada?
Yeah, our current population estimates range from 500 to 600 bears through the state of Nevada, which is a significant difference considering that in 1979, the director of the Nevada Department of Wildlife at the Western Black Bear Workshop made the statement that Nevada at that time had no bears, so they had no bear management responsibilities. So in a relatively short period of time, we've seen the population grow to 500 to 600 bears.
Give us a sense then of what the thoughts are among wildlife biologists. I mean, is this unusual for them to be able to A, recolonize, and B, to grow their numbers so big over a relatively short amount of time? We're talking, you know, 35, 40 years here.
Yeah, in a sense, it's not unusual to see wildlife populations expanding in this country. A lot of wildlife populations, where they be black bears or white-tailed deer or mule deer, they hit their low points about at the turn of the previous century, so in the early 1900s. And so a lot of species are increasing, particularly in the western U.S. Now, not all populations of each of those species are increasing, but they're at higher levels than they were compared to about 115 years ago, let's say. What is unusual in this case is that it's fairly unique for a large carnivore to rebound. Black bears seem to be the exception, but especially if you look globally, having recovery of large carnivores on the landscape is a relatively rare phenomena, although it does occur in isolated examples.
And I want to reemphasize, this was not a reintroduction, right? There was no, you know, releasing of bears in the middle of the Great Basin or anything like that.
No, this was completely a natural rewilding and recolonization event. And that, you know, the genetic study that we just recently completed on this shows that the source of those were some of those bear populations that had refugia in the Sierra Nevada mountains.
John Beckman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, one of a couple of biologists who co-authored that recent study indicating the movement of bears into the Great Basin, so across the state of Nevada now. John is a biologist and connectivity initiative coordinator for the Wildlife Conservation Society of North America. If you've got questions or comments about the bear migration, join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned it unusual for large carnivores. Is this unexpected of black bears specifically?
I think, you know, one of the things that we know in some instances is that black bear populations seem to be increasing in several places throughout the United States and more broadly in North America. But having the long-term data set to actually be able to document those increases over time and then to study the complete picture, whether it be the population and the demographics, but also the genetic consequences of that is fairly unusual.
So is Nevada somewhat unique in providing relatively few impediments to such a journey? I mean, it is. There are lots of vast spaces in which any animal can move.
Yeah, one of the things that's fairly typical, even in Nevada, where you may assume there's a lot of open space, which there is, there's still, particularly in western Nevada, a high what we call human footprint. And those are things like urban centers, roads, fences, those kind of things that can all be barriers to movements, particularly long-distance movements of species. And for black bears, one of the things that we saw early on when we were studying them is that things like roads are a significant source of mortality for bears. We had a high level of vehicle and bear collisions early in the study, and so we had to look at some ways to mitigate the impact of those roads to ensure a continued successful recolonization and movement of the population back into Nevada.
Which brings us to your title with WCS North America, which is Connectivity Initiative Coordinator. So it sounds like you're generally involved in the idea of creating corridors through which animals can migrate?
Yes, I've worked on several different species other than bears, including species like pronghorn and elk and moose in various systems to look at the ability of animals to roam around the landscape. One of the things that we've always kind of had a general idea and understanding that ability of animals to move on the landscape would be important, particularly in places like the Great Basin where habitat a lot of times is in these isolated pockets. But what has happened in the last 20 years or so is that our technology advances, particularly with things like GPS collar technology, has really allowed us to understand how far these animals really can move on the landscape, and a lot of times it's pretty shocking.
Well, we learned that with OR7, the famous wandering wolf of the West. I mean, so are there things that are in the works for projects specifically in Nevada to make the passage easier to get the bears across large roads or anything?
Yeah, there's no projects per se right now, but there are discussions beginning about how to deal long-term with the increase, for example, in the number of highways and traffic on those roads and how we mitigate roads, particularly interstates, on connectivity. And so those discussions are beginning as the state of Nevada begins to get data on a suite of species, not just bears, but things like mountain lions and deer and elk and all kinds of species that move around the landscape.
Got a couple minutes left. I'm going to take a call here from Gail and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with John Beckman, who's been tracking black bears moving back into the Great Basin. Hi, Gail.
Hello.
Hello.
I wanted to share a experience in the 1950s at a summer camp between Squaw Valley and I-84,
mm-hmm.
or I-80.
I-80.
I remember at night black bears coming up. Of course, they looked black because the night was black, coming up on our sleeping porch and shimming up and down these gigantic cedar trees at the encampment was called the Cedars. and that was in the 1950s. And I recall a large bear and two smaller bears playing at night, going up and down these trees that were growing out of the middle of our sleeping porch. And of course, we all were freaked out and stayed under the covers, and the dog hid under the bed, and the bears were having a great time.
Okay, so interesting story. Thanks for sharing that. So around Squaw Valley, I think she said. So John, I mean, that sort of tracks with the knowledge of the bears in the Sierra itself, right?
Yes, that's a perfect example of that remnant, you know, of populations that we always had good, healthy populations remaining in the Sierra Mountains, even though we didn't have them in the Great Basin. So that's pretty typical of the types of stories we hear from people that spent time in the Sierra Nevada back in those periods of time.
As the bears move further east into Nevada, have there been some increased human-bear conflicts? I mean, things other than overturned trash cans?
Yeah, that's one of the first things that myself and Carl Lackey at the Nevada Department of Wildlife were investigating when we began looking at this bear population over 20 years ago. What we saw when bears were starting to come back into Nevada is some of those conflicts with bears getting into garbage, similar to what you hear in the Lake Tahoe Basin, that was starting to spill over onto the east front of the Carson Range, for example, in Nevada. So places like Reno and Carson City, Minden and Gardnerville, Nevada, started having those issues. And so what we saw is that these urban resources in the form of garbage were kind of pulling these bears when they were first coming back into the system down out of the backcountry and concentrating them in these urban interface areas. And that was leading to a fairly high mortality rate of bears, again, mostly from being hit by vehicles. And so we worked hard with education and conservation efforts and had some ordinances go in requiring bear-proofing the communities. And once we did that, we saw the mortality rates drop, and that allowed the continued expansion, and probably at a faster rate than it would happen without those efforts.
All right, so lots of interesting things happening now. 500 to 600 bears, perhaps, in the state of Nevada from a population officially listed as zero in 1979. John Beckman at the Wildlife Conservation Society of North America, thanks for joining us today in The Exchange.